Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel in mind now and in person soon.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Ted Kooser was named the 13th Poet Laureate of the United States in 2004. He was the first U.S. Poet Laureate from the Midwest. He grew up in Ames, Iowa, and now lives in Nebraska. He has said, "I write for other people with the hope that I can help them see the wonderful things within their everyday experiences." His collection, Delights and Shadows, does help us see the beauty in the ordinary, but also heartbreak and hurt. In 2005, Kooser received the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry for this collection. We'll talk about this book, Kooser's life, and his work this hour with three Iowa poets. But first, let's listen to Ted Kooser read a poem from Delights and Shadows.
Zenith. It was part of her parlor's darkness during the war years. Its Gothic cabinet, its shadowy speaker behind a thin lattice like the face of a priest. But when my grandmother snapped its switch each evening to tune in the news, it opened the tiny Japanese fan of its dial, and light spilled over her fingers, swollen and stiff. And in near darkness, my sister and I, shushed into silence, and grandmother, rubbing and kneading the pain from her hands, sat there at the rear of the action, a patrol in the weak yellow glow from the war.
Zenith, read by the author Ted Kooser. This hour, we're talking about this collection, Delights and Shadows, on the Talk of Iowa Book Club. And with me now is Deborah Marquardt, professor of English at Iowa State University. She teaches in the MFA program in creative writing and environment. She is also the Iowa Poet Laureate and the author of a number of books, including Small Buried Things. Hello, Deb.
Hi, Charity. It's great to be here.
Well, it's wonderful to have you with us today. And this collection by Ted Kooser, I want to talk about him and his work in the bigger picture in a moment. But let's start with this collection, Delights and Shadows. As I mentioned, it won the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry back in 2005. And it really takes us to a place and a time and a people in the Midwest.
Yeah, I teach this book quite often in my classes at Iowa State, and this is something that students comment on consistently, that, you know, they're always surprised to see Iowa represented in literature, and they're always happy to see the students who are from Iowa say, "I never thought that, you know, Dishwater could be a poem," or, you know, in this case, the poem Zenith, you know, the dial of an old radio. And so it suggests things that can be written about, you know, even if they're not from Iowa, if they're from other parts of the country or the world, it suggests very commonplace things that they can actually turn into poems.
And Ted Kooser did grow up in Ames, Iowa, and he's been writing for a very, very long time. He's talked about really getting serious about writing when he was 18 years old, but he didn't set out to be a poet.
No, not at all. You know, there's sort of lore around the Iowa State campus about this creative writing club. And there was a professor in the English department, Pearl Hogarth. She was a Shakespearean scholar, but she was very interested in creative writing. This was way before creative writing was in the curriculum. And she taught basic writing courses, too, at Iowa State. And she would handpick people to be in this creative writing club. And Ted, you know, credits that creative writing club as the beginning of his interest in writing poetry. And incidentally, Tom Harkin was also part of that creative writing club at Iowa State many years ago.
But he ended up working most of his adult life in the insurance industry, right?
That's right. Yeah. You know, he was a vice president at an insurance company. And of course, you know, we have another great American poet, Wallace Stevens, who worked along that same vein. Now, it'd be something to be said for working in another industry. You know, you come into contact with situations and people that work their way into poems, rather than just being a poet working with poets, thinking about poetry all the time, trying to have poetic experiences. his work has very sort of outward looking perspective, watching people, trying to observe. You know, he has great humanity in his work and empathy. And I think that probably comes from working in the profession that he worked in.
You have met Ted Kooser. He seems like a very humble, very approachable person, a very real person.
Oh, anyone who meets him or has met him knows this. He's just a, as I said, empathetic, generous, lovely person. I think when he was laureate, he actually had his phone number listed on his website. So, you know, you could just call him up. Hey, you know, Ted, you know, tell me something about poetry. I wonder how many people availed themselves of that. But he just, you know, is very open and generous in his approach to, you know, not only poetry, but life. And I'm sure, as you know, he has another whole set of interests as a painter. And you can see in his work that painterly quality. He's always painting.
When you introduce this collection to your students, Delights and Shadows, tell me how you start, how you bring them into it.
Well, I'll have them read the book on their own, and then I usually have them write a 3-page critical response, quote-unquote critical. It's more of a craft-based, you know, I'll say what poems really moved you, which ones were the most memorable, what were some of the techniques that you saw him using, were there images or metaphors? And so it's interesting to see a group of, you know, 20 students come back. And often I'll find that they choose the same, you know, 10 to 12 poems from the collection to write about. So there are certainly sort of stars, you know, greatest hits in this collection. But I like teaching full collections of poetry because it's really nice to see the way that certain poems, you know, the way the poems contribute to each other, you know, when you read them in a grouping, you gain knowledge about the world that's been constructed in the book. And so that's usually the way we talk about, you know, any book of poetry. And this one in particular, you know, it came at a certain point, I think, in Ted's life when I think it's very well known that he went through a period of time where he was diagnosed with cancer and went through some treatments. And so I think, you know, we often see this with artists who go through these very deep troughs of experience that, you know, probably have great moments of despair in them. And somehow they come through the other side with this incredible treasure, you know, and this is what happened, I think, with Ted with this book. His work has always been amazing. I've known him since the early 90s. I think I met him in 1989 or something like that, 88, before I moved to Ames, before I moved to Iowa. So, you know, he's always been just such an amazing poet. But this book in particular, you know, it was a very specific moment in his life, and he came forward with this treasure, really. The book is a treasure.
The first poem that we encounter in the collection is Walking on Tiptoe. And I wonder if you'd read that for us, Deb, and we can talk about it briefly.
Yeah, you know, I think poems, they're written in a certain historical moment, but some poems continue, well, many poems continue to have relevance, and they get more important as time goes on. And this poem, for me, has been that way. He's really talking about humans. And, you know, the place that we inhabit on the planet, it's called Walking on Tiptoe, and it's the first poem in the book. Long ago, we quit lifting our heels, like the others, horse, dog, and tiger, though we thrill to their speed as they flee. Even the mouse bearing the great weight of a nugget of dog food is enviably graceful. There is little spring to our walk. We're so burdened with responsibility, all of the disciplinary actions that have fallen to us, the punishments, the killings, and all with our feet bound stiff in the skins of the conquered. But sometimes, in the early hours, we can feel what it must have been like to be one of them, up on our toes, stealing past doors where others are sleeping, I'm suddenly able to see in the dark.
In some ways, I find that poem to be, his work is so accessible. That poem has so many layers. I feel like of all of the poetry in the collection, maybe that's the poem that's most open to the interpretation of the reader. And that's where we begin. Why do you think, Deb, that that's where we start?
Well, books, the way books are put together, so fun to talk about this. And I'm really looking forward to the other poets who are visiting us and the callers. You know, but when we put books together, we try to give reading instructions to the reader. And we see that, for example, with the epigraph to this collection. The epigraph is from Dickinson, and it says, sailors cannot see the north, but they know the needle can. And so, you know, you can sit and think about that for a long time, but I think what that epigraph is saying is, you know, we, as when we're living, we can't see the north, we can't often see things that we know are there, but poems can point to them, you know, so then as a needle points to the north for sailors. So with this poem in particular, you know, I think he's kind of calling out we Homo sapiens and saying, you know, here we are walking in the skins of the vanquished, and we don't walk on tiptoes anymore like our, you know, dogs and horses and cats and tigers do with that. Oh, I wish I were a scientist. I would know what the name of that is, but the way that, you know, animals walk literally on their tiptoes. And he says, you know, why, the reason we don't have spring in our walk is because we're so burdened with responsibilities. And then he goes on to kind of call out the human race and say, you know, our disciplinary actions, the punishments, the killings. And, you know, I think he's kind of asking, what have we lost? You know, I mean, in this transaction where we've taken quote unquote responsibility, and then he brings us, you know, as Ted will do in his poems, he brings us back at the end of the poem to, sometimes at night though, you know, when the burdens for a moment have been lifted, then we feel like it's what it's like to be a mouse, you know, stealing past the door, and maybe we can even see in the dark. And I think that reference to the dark is important because of the title, Shadows,
and Delights. We have to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's the Talk of Iowa Book Club. We are talking about Delights and Shadows by Ted Kooser this hour. With me, Deborah Marquardt, the Iowa Poet Laureate, and we'll bring a couple more poets into the conversation in a moment. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, the June meeting of the Talk of Iowa Book Club. And the book today is Delights and Shadows. It's a poetry collection by Ted Kooser. Ted Kooser was the 13th Poet Laureate of the United States. He received the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry for this collection. It was published back in 2004. He received that 2005 Pulitzer Prize. And with me this hour to talk about this collection, Deb Marquardt, Professor of English at Iowa State University. She teaches in the MFA program in creative writing and environment. She's also the Iowa Poet Laureate and author of a number of books, including Small Buried Things. Caleb Rainey is also here with us. Caleb Rainey lives in Iowa City. He is also known as the Negro Artist. He's the author of two poetry collections, Look, Black Boy, and Heart Notes. He's the founder and program director for IC Speaks, a high school spoken word program, and he performs spoken word poetry. Hello, Caleb.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today. I appreciate you taking the time. And also with us, Paul Brook, a professor of English at Grandview University in Des Moines, author of the poetry collection Arm Wrestling at the Iowa State Fair. Hello, Paul.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. And before the two of you dive into this collection, we're going to listen once again to Ted Kooser reading one of his poems. Let's listen.
Memory. Spinning up dust and corn shucks as it crossed the chalky, exhausted fields, it sucked up into its heart hot work, cold work, lunch buckets, good horses, bad horses, their names and the names of mules that were better or worse than the horses. Then rattled the dented tin sides of the threshing machine, shook the manure spreader, cranked the tractor's crank that broke the uncle's arm, then swept on through the windbreak, taking the treehouse and dirty magazines, turning its fury on the barn where cows kicked over buckets and the gray cat sat for a squirt of thick milk in its whiskers. crossed the chicken pen, undid the hook, plucked a warm brown egg from the meanest hen, then turned toward the house, where threshers were having dinner, peeled back the roof and the kitchen ceiling, reached down and snatched up uncles and cousins, grandma, grandpa, parents and children one by one, held them like dolls, looked long and longingly into their faces, then set them back in their chairs with blue and white platters of chicken and ham and mashed potatoes still steaming before them, with boats of gravy and bowls of peas and three kinds of pie, and suddenly, with a sound like a sigh, drew up its crowded, roaring, dusty funnel, and there at its tip was the nib of a pen.
That's Ted Kooser reading memory from his collection, Delights and Shadows. And Paul, I want to turn to you. This is one of the poems that you selected, one that you particularly wanted to talk about today. Why did you pick this out?
Well, when I teach creative writing, of course, and I also teach literary theory. And one of the things I talk about in literary theory is that you want to think about reader response. That is, what's the best way to read a poem? What's the best entry point? And so there are two schools of thought, right? One is, and kind of what we're doing right now, is kind of groupthink, right? It's Stanley Fish. And Fish believes that we read in schools, no pun intended, but intended, that we read together in order to find and form meaning. And then the other flip side is Wolfgang Iser, who believes that you should read by yourself, you know, in a room, alone, figure it out on your own. I believe you should do both, okay? So what I like about memory is that it's very cool that I can read this on my own, and I have my own connections, right? So when I was a kid, I grew up in southern Iowa. I lived in Nebraska. I have all these connections to Ted Kooser because I lived that same experience. I grew up working on the farm. I remember those moments and those ties. You know, it's right there. But then I'm coming back with all of you, and we're reading this, and there's connection between all of us. And we're coming up with a universal meaning that has power beyond just me. It's us. And that's really hard to pull off. And that's why I think his poems work so well. So this poem is, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. You continue, Paul.
Okay. So this poem is really interesting because when you start to read it, you think, oh my gosh, what's going on? It's a tornado. Oh crap. And so then I'm tossed back to when I was a kid and tornadoes came through and, you know, my hometown was destroyed by one. I've been picked up in a car by a moving tornado myself. I'm flipping out, right? Well, initially. And then I realized, wait a second, you know, as I'm reading the poem, there's that moment, that hinge. And then I'm figuring out its metaphor. And then I'm figuring it out again. There's another metaphor. And then, oh boy, there it is. So, yeah, that's the beauty of this moment.
Yeah. A lot of people describe Ted Kooser's work and this collection as, well, people in poetry circles love to use the term elegiac, but in writing about a time that has passed, sort of a eulogy for this kind of Midwestern life. Now, Deb was just a few minutes ago reading the first poem in the collection, which is universal and feels right now very of this moment as we take a really good look at humanity and think about the weight that we carry on our shoulders right now. Do you feel like this is elegiac, Paul?
I mean, it is. I mean, it's harkening, taking us back to a place in time that maybe is, I mean, there's still moments of this, but it's not like it was. But at the same time, it's memory. So the question becomes, what does memory mean? I mean, that's the theme of the whole book. That's what as Deb was saying, the setup early on in the first poem is trying to figure out what that all means, where we are as humans, et cetera. So this poem to me is about the human condition and memory and how we deal with it, how we remember. And I have those memories. I have never written about them, but Ted did it for me, which is cool, you know? So I don't have to then have that catharsis, but I have it through the poem with him and I can feel that emotion. And then I also feel him as a writer, and it's important that that's early in the collection to set up that idea.
Caleb, tell me your impression of the collection as you dove into Delights and Shadows.
What really stood out to me was the special attention given to the simple, right? And how much we slow down in moments that really help us feel. And I think Paul's even mentioning it a little bit in this memory, is it feels intimate, right? This, the way that we write this, makes these moments and these small details make everything so intimate and close to one another. And yet we have this constant kind of conversation about the lights and shadows, about positives and negatives, and when they're paired right next to each other and what that looks like. And so I think there's just a lot going on in this collection that I really appreciate. But for me, it's really about how the simple, the rural, can be so special.
Deb, before we move on to the next poem, anything that you wanted to add on memory?
Well, I think that, you know, the poem is really a beautiful poem, as, you know, everyone has already pointed out. And one of the other unique features of it is it's actually an Ars Poetica. And it's that very last line when he pulls the whole entire tornado down into the nib of a pen. And so there's this idea that, you know, catastrophe can move through a life, but art is made out of these things. And he's showing us an Ars Poetica is a poem about poems, about writing poems. And so much of the book is about representation, you know, the ekphrastic poems, the Winslow Homer poems, where he's writing about paintings. And, you know, ekphrastic poems are written in response to a work of art. So, you know, he, as a painter, has that multiple layered perspective as a poet, but then also as a painter. And you see that in that poem Memory in particular, where he points very much to the process of writing itself.
It's the Talk of Iowa Book Club. This hour, we're talking about Ted Kooser's poetry collection, Delights and Shadows. You're welcome to join the conversation as well. If you have been reading along with us, we'd love to hear your thoughts about a favorite poem in the collection or a question for any of our poets here this hour. You're welcome to join us, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Paul Brook, professor of English at Grandview University, Deborah Marquardt, the Iowa Poet Laureate, and Caleb Rainey, who also goes by the Negro Artist, author of Look, Black Boy, and Heart Notes. And Caleb, you chose the next poem that we want to talk about, and that poem is Mother. Would you read that for us?
For sure. Mid-April already, and the wild plums bloom at the roadside. A lacy white against the exuberant, jubilant green of new grass and the dusty, fading black of burned-out ditches. No leaves, not yet, only the delicate, star-petaled blossoms, sweet with their timeless perfume. You have been gone a month today, and I have missed three rains and one night-long watch for tornadoes. I sat in the cellar for 6 to 8 while fat spring clouds went somersaulting, rumbling east. Then it poured, a storm that walked on legs of lightning, dragging its shaggy belly over the fields. The meadowlarks are back, and the finches are turning from green to gold. Those same two geese have come to the pond again this year, honking in over the trees and splashing down. They never nest, but stay a week or two, then leave. The peonies are up, the red sprouts burning in circles like birthday candles. For this is the month of my birth, as you know, the best month to be born in, thanks to you. Everything ready to burst with living. There will be no more new flannel nightshirts sewn on your old black singer, no birthday card addressed in a shaky but businesslike hand. You asked me if I would be sad when it happened. And I am sad. The iris I moved from your house now hold in the dusty dry fists of their roots, green knives and forks as if waiting for dinner, as if spring were a feast. I thank you for that. Were it not for the way you taught me to look at the world, to see the life at play in everything, I would have been lonely forever.
Caleb, why did you want to talk about this poem in particular?
Oh, man. For a couple of reasons. One is I think that last line stood out to me as something that I felt marked all of this collection, which is this finding life at play in everything, right? There is so much there in so many of these poems in this collection that I was like, oh, he wrote what he writes right there in that moment, and kind of gives it to his mother, gives his mom credit. I also think this piece is very, or this collection is very matriarchal, right? There's a lot of focus on the women in his life, his mother and his grandmother, and the influence and the beauty that they hold. And so I think that was something that stood out to me, as well as just this contrast of we're talking about a mother's death and a son's birth, right? We're talking about his birthday and his mother being gone. And I just thought that combo together, that comparison of those two being squished right next to each other, was very much like Delights and Shadows, right? Very much was fitting of the title.
I found it to be a very comforting poem to read in this moment in time. You know, we've lost so many people in the last 4 months, so much heartbreak, so much loss. But I love that feeling of, you know, we have the tools, we have the memories given to us by our loved ones that we can carry forward. It also kind of ripped my heart out because one of my grandmothers had a Black Singer sewing machine and one of my grandmother's favorite flowers were peonies. And it's very, very moving poem. Paul, do you have anything you wanted to add on this one?
Well, I think this is a very interesting poem in lots of ways. But the thing that struck me was that a lot of times in the poems here, the second person is the delivery point for connecting with the reader. But here it's not. He's actually addressing her. And that is a fundamental change. I think that's why Caleb is saying, like, why it was so profound to him, at least my sense was. And then it's almost like the way the line breaks go too, like, you asked me if I would be sad when it happened, and then there's a stanza break, line break, stanza break, and then I am sad. And then go to the last line, I would have to be lonely forever. It's like, and it's a short line. It's not a long line, like, it's a little shorter. And then it's like, punch, punch, oh my gosh, what? So you have this, like, visceral, emotional connection to the poem, and it's because of the way he's linguistically playing with language and playing with the you, but also it's the you. Does that make sense? You have the two yous going on, and so you're having to differentiate that and make sense of it, and I think he does that masterfully.
Yeah, it's almost like he walks us through the stages of grief just within the poem. Anything you want to add, Deb?
Just to second and third the idea of the juxtaposition of the, you know, shadows and delight, and actually that, you know, the opening of the poem, he's got this juxtaposition of the wild plums blooming on the roadside, the lacy white against the exuberant, jubilant green of new grass, and then the dusty fading black of burned out ditches. So you see what he has there. He's got all this splash of color in spring, but then also sort of the ravages of winter. And actually, I really think that this collection is tied to Eliot's Wasteland, that, you know, famous April is the cruelest month. But a lot of people don't realize the lines that come after that are breeding lilacs out of the dead land, mixing memory and desire, stirring dull roots with spring rain. So this whole book is about that, is about the way out of this sort of devastation of winter and the damage that winter does to the landscape and to people. Something springs forward, that is life continuing in some form of hope. There's incredible, you know, obviously love in this piece, and, you know, love wins. Love always wins in these poems.
We only have about a minute before we go to a break. We have some people who want to be part of this conversation, and you are welcome to join us at 866-780-9100. We have this from Mike in Des Moines. Ted Kooser's work reminds me of Pablo Neruda's collection, Odes to Common Things, but he also wants us to discuss a poem called Cream Corn in terms of current events. And it's really the one poem in the collection that takes a look at race in kind of a head-on way and talks about really terrible racism within a small community where workers have come in from Jamaica to work in a plant. And I mean, we have about 30 seconds before we get to the break, Deb, but you want to comment on that quickly?
I'm raising my hand. Well, you know, the journal that I edit, Flyway, actually published this poem, and it's, you know, set in Ames, Iowa, in Iowa, and it features this cream can, this giant green giant plant, and these rumors that circulated about these Jamaican workers who had come. And, you know, I think that Kuzer, you know, he addresses race in this poem and talks about that there were these African-American families in this community, and that they were differentiated by the people from the Jamaican workers. I mean, it's very complicated racially. And there's this rumor that the Jamaicans are peeing into the cream corn. And at the end of the poem, you know, of course, this is nonsense. But he says, running the lift years later, wherever we've been, wherever we've come to, our ignorance spoils the cream.
Spoils the cream corn. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about Delights and Shadows by Ted Kuzer.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel in mind now and in person soon.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is the June meeting of the Talk of Iowa Book Club. We're reading Delights and Shadows by the poet Ted Kuzer, and you are welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Also remember, it's time to start reading for July. We have a family-friendly book club coming up in July, but there are two books that you're assigned for July. We're going to read Little House on the Prairie by Laura Ingalls Wilder and The Birch Bark House by Louise Erdrich. So we would love for you to read those books and discuss them with us coming up in July. With me this hour, as we talk about Delights and Shadows by Ted Kuzer, Deborah Marquardt, professor of English at Iowa State University. She teaches in the MFA program in creative writing and environment. She's also the Iowa Poet Laureate and author of a number of books, including Small Buried Things. Caleb Rainey is here, also known as the Negro Artist. He's author of Look Black Boy and Heart Notes. He's also a spoken word performer and founder and program director for Iowa City Speaks, a high school spoken word program. Paul Brook is here, professor of English at Grandview University, author of the poetry collection Arm Wrestling at the Iowa State Fair, in addition to other books. And I want to get to the phones now. Peter is on the line in Seoul. And hi, Peter.
Oh, hello. Yes. Well, what I wanted to comment on really is almost a direct follow-up to what you just discussed, because Cream Corn was one of the poems I was going to cite as an example. But I guess I see Ted Kuzer in these poems addressing a number of contemporary issues, you know, and not that it's elegiac, but there's a great deal of very much ongoing present-day contemporary issues. And some examples I might cite are the poem In January, where the Vietnamese cafe is the only store or the only place open. Garage Sale, which is about, in a subtle way, it's about domestic abuse. And so anyway, I just wanted to leave it at that and kind of see if anybody... Cream Corn was one of the poems I was going to cite as an example, and, you know, so anyway, I'll just leave it at that. Thanks.
Yeah. Peter, thank you so much for your call. Again, 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Caleb, I'll turn to you on this. Of course, whether it's something that happened long ago or something that happened now, human emotions, human experiences have a certain universality to them. But in reading the collection, how did you feel sort of the push and pull between history and contemporary issues?
So I thought that they were definitely nodded to. I would say that the collection doesn't linger too long on them, I don't think, specifically on the examples that were mentioned. But I do think Ted kind of painting a broad stroke of what it's like life in the Midwest, it would have been foolish of him to not mention that, for that to not be a part of the experience. And so I think he did do a good job kind of nodding to other more complicated things that happen in the relationship in the Midwest.
Well, and I mean, even the title of the book, Delights and Shadows, of course, we tend to get very nostalgic about the past. I think probably everywhere, but I feel particularly in the Midwest, we have a very, very strong connection with nostalgia, at least a lot of us do.
Oh, yeah.
Did you want to add anything to that, Caleb?
No, I'll leave it.
Okay. But, you know, I mean, with Delights and Shadows, obviously there is a darkness. There's pain, there's hurt, and there's racism and many other things there. And Paul, I do want to move on to this next poem that we want to talk about. I think it's a really pivotal poem in the collection. Several of you mentioned it being a pivotal poem for you. But before we jump into that, if there's anything you wanted to add on what our caller was talking about, did you have anything you wanted to mention?
I just think that, you know, obviously when you're reading poetry, you can apply all kinds of your own ideas to it. But certainly it does seem like there's a kind of timeliness to several of the poems. And I don't know if we'll get to Tectonics or not. Probably not. But if you think about that poem as an idea of how you deal with racial strife, injustice, or even your own emotional loss, eventually things will go under the surface again, and then they'll pop back up, or we will never get to that again, or the world will change in a way that we maybe we're not happy with. We pretend like we are. So I think it's interesting that it's a thread that runs through the collection. And certainly I think the caller was astute to see that theme.
Let's move on and focus on for just a moment on At the Cancer Clinic. Paul, could you read that for us?
Absolutely. At the cancer clinic, she is being helped toward the open door that leads to the examining rooms by two young women I take to be her sisters. Each bends to the weight of an arm and steps with a straight, tough bearing of courage. At what must seem to be a great distance, a nurse holds the door, smiling and calling encouragement. How patient she is in the crisp white sails of her clothes. The sick woman peers from under her funny knit cap to watch each foot swing, shuffling forward, and take its turn under her weight. There is no restlessness or impatience or anger anywhere in sight. Grace fills the clean mold of this moment, and all the shuffling magazines grow still.
At the Cancer Clinic. Paul, I know this was one that you particularly wanted to talk about. Why was it something that spoke to you?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, like, and I'm watching Deb's face respond to the poem, and I think that's, and her visceral reaction is, oh, my word, that's right now. You know, and I think the line for me that is, like, so imperative, there is no restlessness or impatience or anger anywhere in sight. And, oh, my gosh, what a world it would be if we could get to that, you know. But for one shining moment, he sees it. And he's like, that's the best of humanity. That's the best of who we are. And I'm honestly, I've seen some of those moments this past week even. People doing amazing wonderful things that are changing the dynamic of culture, of how we see race, of how we deal with difficult situations, and that gives me hope. You know, I'm not hopeless. I'm filled with hope because those moments. Now, they don't happen often.
They're fleet enough, and they pass and they're fleeting so quickly.
But it's like fishing, right? Eventually, you will have success. Right, but you got to believe that you will, and I think that's the beauty of it here. Also, he walks us through it with imagery in such a way that you track it, right? So, you know, we're in the door, we're watching the nurse, we're watching this woman, we're watching the sisters, we imagine, and we see it all unfolding, and it's like a flip book in the mind, and we can see it all tracking through, and then we go, oh, there it is, and I think that is amazing. And other people notice it too, because the magazines stop moving. They're not flipping through the magazines anymore. They're paying attention to what is good and right in the world. Oh, my word. Okay, that's the best message I've heard forever. Right.
Caleb, you said that you felt like this is the poem that really sums up this collection. Why do you say that?
Well, because we're talking delights and shadows. If you think shadows, if you associate that with negativity, a cancer clinic, easily you could connect that, right? Easily you could think that is a place of shadows, of sadness, of sorrow. And yet we have this delight here. We have what I like how Paul said is like the good of humanity is right here in this moment, in a place that is, you could assume is full of shadows, of hopelessness. It could have that. And instead there is this delight and this push forward. And I think even pointing out each sister, right, each bends to the weight of an arm. I was thinking about weight and how that works when we've already talked about tiptoe, right? And what's happening there is not only is the weight of our human punishments and our killings, but also of us holding each other up, of working with each other is also part of the reason we're no longer on tiptoe, but part of the reason that we can find still delight, right? And we can still be moving forward. And so I thought it was just so beautiful.
Deb, what do you want to add? Again, Paul was talking about watching your face during that poem. Clearly, although all of these poems are so moving and take us on such a journey. And I, just as a reader, I recommend reading the collection out loud because it changes the experience. But Deb, what do you want to add?
Well, you know, all that's been said, and also, you know, I love the grace fills the clean mold of this moment, and to think about, you know, we were talking about these ephemeral moments that happen with grace and generosity when we see people letting go of their own needs and taking care of someone else. But as we said, those are very brief and fleeting. So what a poem can do is capture a moment like that, kind of just like, you know, put it under a crucible so that we can see it and preserve it. And I think that's what this poem does. And all the shuffling magazines grow still is just amazing. The magazines were not in the poem at all, but they're sort of implied because we're in a waiting room. And a lot of my students have felt that the nurse holds the door smiling and calling encouragement. And she's so patient in her crisp white sails of her clothes is really, you know, could be read as someone calling, you know, a person to the light, you know, sort of walking toward their death. So it's a very grave poem, but it does have this abiding quality that at least it's being witnessed. The moment is being witnessed. It's such a beautiful poem.
The whole collection, I read a quote from Ted Kooser at the beginning saying, "I write for other people with the hope that I can help them see the wonderful things within their everyday experiences." And of course, it's not just wonderful things. We see the shadows as well. But I found reading these poems to be a really powerful centering experience. And after spending some time with them, then it helps me look around. It helps me feel. It helps me sort of break down the things that I see and have the privilege to experience on a daily basis. And we do not have a lot of time left. Caleb, I want to turn to you here in just the last few minutes because this is a Midwestern collection. I have with me, of course, three Midwestern poets. And Caleb, you have a very different lived experience from Ted Kooser, but you've said that this feels welcoming to you because you know and love these people. When I read your first collection, Look Black Boy, as a Midwesterner, I had that same emotion. I said, this is not my lived experience, but I know and love these people. This is real to me. So tell me a little bit about your feeling as a Black man reading the words of a significantly older white guy from the Midwest.
It reminds me of how we all see beauty, right? We're all looking for the light. We are all looking for the light in spaces and when it's dark. And so even though a lot of these experiences that he writes about aren't mine, I also didn't grow up like on a farm, right? Like I didn't have that experience, but I could connect with it because I know what it means to love something, right? And to care about it or to spend time appreciating something. And so I think that is really how I felt about reading this piece, knowing that his experience was a little different than mine, but yet still in the same world, right? We're in the same same life. We're sharing the same space. And that he's still questioning and looking at some of the shadows that existed in his own life. And that's what I like to do with my own work.
As we finish out the hour, I would like to end with one of your poems. Would you perform for us your poem, Shots Fired?
For sure. Here's a fact. In my birthday suit, I'm black. Please don't shoot. But when you see me walking at night in my black hoodie and a cartoon knife, you've got to question it. I mean, me. So when I take a step towards you, or I try to show you my ID, or I try to run away from you, or I put my hands where you can see, fear's too thick to look through, and you're too anxious to shoot. So you pull your gun up off your hip, if it's not already drawn, and unload the clip until each bullet is gone. So just like at the gun range, you've shot black bodies, the embodiment of danger, hunted as a hobby, and I'm supposed to watch as hope dies in the street. Because what's a cop to a nigga like me? And here's a fact. My birthday suit, I'm black. Please don't shoot. But your words weaponize your willful ignorance, working to dehumanize anyone with pigment. You're so articulate isn't a compliment. It just exposes your notions, preconceived and atrocious, that it's a shock I'm able to control language when I'm supposed to be on the block or trying to get rap famous. See, you love my culture, but only for its entertainment. You've got to play ball in the future is another form of unlawful detainment. And when I say Black Lives Matter, you feel a need to respond, all lives matter. Perpetuating the national con so the veil of violence isn't shattered. And with every word you whip out, I'm wounded to my core, overwhelmed with doubt. Because bulletproof vests don't work anymore. Here's a fact. My birthday suit, I'm black. Please don't shoot. But your silence is like a bullet, burrowing beneath skin and burning through bone. Because I was looking for kin. I can't win this fight on my own. But I sounded too black. And my burden, so much bigger, that you couldn't have my back or blame the one behind the trigger. When I ask you to speak out against racist chants, I ask you to shout, I ask you to take a chance, but you keep your mouth closed. Because you know how friends can turn foes, how privilege can become woes. See, your silence shoots my soul. When there are lives to save and you have the control. But like God turning his face away when Christ was forsaken, you leave me there, hanging. Stark naked. Here's a fact. In my birthday suit, I'm black. Please, please don't shoot.
That's Caleb Rainey, also known as the Negro Artist. He's the author of Look, Black Boy, and Heart Notes. Thank you so much to Caleb. Thank you, Deb Marquardt, Iowa Poet Laureate, and thank you, Paul Brook, Professor of English at Grandview University and author of the poetry collection Arm Wrestling at the Iowa State Fair. This has been the June meeting of the Talk of Iowa Book Club. We've been talking about Delights and Shadows by Ted Kooser. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.